You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Carcy-Baev.
Dr. Kaplan, thanks so much for finding time to join us today on the Ivy Podcast. Just for our listeners, a little of a background story. Well, you know, a lot of you guys have heard about Envision Healthcare because I've hosted quite a few guests on the podcast so far. And a few years back, when I was part of the project management office at Envision, one of the bigger initiatives that got, you know, thrown our way, almost baptizing by fire, was, you know, the overall radiology initiative. And long story short, that's how myself and Dr. Kaplan have met in one of the steering committees that, you know, we were facilitating for our stakeholders. And that's where we met. We've stayed in touch, and I'm just excited to reconnect with you finally on, you know, in this type of setting and talk about all things radiology, healthcare, and actually, you know, a lot of the things that you're working on right now.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And I remember when we started in our organization and the impact that you had on our project management team in really changing that culture and changing the efficacy of that team really was profound. And so neat to see that you've moved on to do things like this, where you're really trying to take some of those lessons that you've learned there and demonstrated excellence in and carry it out to share those lessons with other people. So I think there's a lot to learn from your background and your experience. So pleasure to work with you again.
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate the kind endorsement. I learned quite a bit from you directly through that experience. So can you tell us a little bit more about your role within the organization? What specifically you're focusing on these days and what falls under your purview?
Sure. So I run the radiology operations for our Southeast market. That means I have five operational direct reports and then seven clinical direct reports. So those are regional medical directors and then practice managers and practice directors that report up to me. So I'm responsible for the clinical and operational function of our radiology unit within the Southeast United States, which is Florida, all the way up through North Carolina. It includes our on-site practices, or interventional radiology practices, outpatient care, and teleradiology services. So it's kind of a fun opportunity. I still practice clinically, so I still get to do that side of it. So a lot of business, a lot of clinical, and then some technology that I still get to be a part of as part of the organization. So it kind of combines a lot of different passions and definitely assures that I'll never get bored.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. That's exciting. And, you know, a lot of the things I want to talk to you today is that kind of the cross paths between healthcare and technology. So I have quite a few questions for you around that. I know you're very technologically savvy and you invest a lot in, you know, the technology for healthcare and radiology space in general. So that's very exciting to talk to you about today. But before we get into that, just from the current times perspective with, you know, a lot of companies going through unfortunate events, you know, the furloughs, the layoffs, and, you know, the downsizing in general, what has worked well for you when it comes to kind of, you know, keeping the employee motivations up, the general performance levels? What works well for you as if you were to give an advice to another executive?
It's a great question. And I think it's a question that I would answer during good times and bad times. So I think the same skill set really applies, and it's honesty, transparency, and empathy. When you're honest with your people and you're transparent with them, you're going to build trust. And when you empathize with them and show a true caring for what they're going through, they respect you more as a leader. And when they respect their leader more, they feel more part of a team. And when you can build a team that has a culture built around that honesty and empathy, people really get engaged and they enjoy what they do. There will be good times and bad times, but it's nice when they know that they have other people that they can lean on that are going to be honest with them, that are going to tell them, you know, sort of the good, bad, and the ugly, as I like to say. But people that are going to say, yeah, I hear what you're going through. You're not imagining that. Let's figure out how to get through that together. You're not alone. And I think those types of things go a long way through good times, but especially during bad times.
Love that advice. At the end of the day, you know, you not only talking the talk, but walking the walk. It's putting yourself in the shoes of, you know, what you've talked about, the empathy and really understanding what people are going through. I think that's excellent advice. So as we talk about healthcare and technology in general, you know, healthcare is not known to be as advanced as, let's say, other industries when it comes to technology adoption or, you know, the general innovation. But lately, we've been seeing a lot of trends, a lot of great stuff happening in the industry. From your standpoint, what strategies do you recommend when it comes to selection and implementation of a particular technology for your organization? Through your experience, what were some of the lessons learned through, I guess, most recent implementations? I remember we were going through quite a few projects when I was there, and I'm just curious, as you lead kind of the enterprise radiology space for a major healthcare organization, what helps you, and, you know, when it comes to the actual technology selection of what to invest in?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, because I think first and foremost, trust but verify. Technology is a space where a lot of claims are made that are great on a sales deck, but don't necessarily pan out in reality. And I think especially when you're dealing with healthcare, there's such a downstream impact on a patient's life that you really, really have to scrutinize and do your diligence beyond how you do it in almost any other field. So I think things like live demonstrations, but not demos on a demo system, actually going to a site and seeing somebody use it real time that is already on it. I think that's very important. I think random references. If you take references that somebody gives you, they're pretty much going to be handpicked because they know that they're good references. So I like to ask, well, you know, just give me a list of people who have utilized your system and let me pick who I'll go and call from there. I do that also sometimes with recruiting people. I find that to be very useful. But in general, I think with technology, it's very good to get those random references and ask a lot of questions. I think the more you ask and the more you try to learn, the more you will see where the potential holes are, look at other platforms that solve the same solution or that solve the same problem. And then kind of compare them to each other, and you'll figure out really where the gaps are, because nothing is going to be a perfect solution. So you really want to be able to know what's your upside, but what really is also your downside in terms of gaps. I think pilot groups are also very important. So when you're working with a group of people that you're going to be delivering a product for, you want to know that you at least have a group early on that accept the technology and that like the technology. And that will then be people that can go and carry forth that message of why this is good. Because any technology deployment, no matter how successful it goes, will have its bumps in the road. So if you have a group of people that have been through a pilot and have helped work out some of the kinks, I really think those people can be kind of evangelizers to the rest of the group about where to go and how to successfully navigate some of the challenges.
I love these recommendations. And obviously you've been down that path multiple times, you know, not only, you know, piloting, obtaining the references. I remember that one of the coolest things that I've learned through that experience at Envision Healthcare is when we were working on the major initiative to look at different EHR solutions, we've actually established this vendor selection committee where all of the executives participated in this unbiased process of where we designed the actual scorecards, where we, you know, scored each vendor based on the demos, based on, you know, the references, a lot of the different things. So I absolutely love what you're talking about in terms of really taking that approach and digging a little bit deeper, because like you said, a lot of claims are being made during the demos, and it's, you know, it's very easy to do, go through that sales. But when it comes to the actual implementation and really being the strategic partner, I think it's a different story.
Yeah.
To take that a little bit further, what healthcare trends do you foresee will come out of result of current times? And how do you plan, if you do, leveraging some of these innovations lately?
So on a technology front, I think you're going to see a real challenge, because there's going to be decreased dollars for artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. but there's a greater need for artificial intelligence. And I think that's going to be one of the healthcare system's biggest challenges is as we migrate and leverage technology further, how do we afford it as certain parts of the industry have taken such significant financial hits? But technology may be one of our ways to get out of that hole. So that'll be very interesting. But I think on a more holistic level, you're seeing altered relationships between hospitals and physician groups that had, 30-year relationships that are now altered by what's occurred over the last 6 months. You have different relationships between physician groups and patient and physicians, payers and physicians. And I think a lot of it comes down to there's less trust in some of those relationships as things have gone sideways. And I think when you face adversity is when relationships are put under their greatest pressure. And I think certain organizations and certain people and certain teams have risen to that challenge. And I think those will be the successful ones going forward, like our organization. I think where you have people and organizations who have been less trustworthy and had some of those challenges, I think it's permanently changed some of the dynamics for some of those organizations and people.
Right. And, just to add to that a little bit further, I've seen a great shift towards that kind of value-based care versus the volume-based. It's, I experienced that firsthand, even with e-health and telehealth, that, from technology perspective, where physicians are really taking that approach of more of a kind of preventive measures, so to say, where you take, more active participation in preventing a certain disease versus, where you have to kind of go into the surgery and take, more drastic measures. So I've seen a lot of kind of great, advances in healthcare in general lately for the past, year or so with a shift towards that, which is very exciting.
Yeah, our organization is very excited about the opportunities for value-based care. And being in a multi-specialty organization like ours, there's a lot of opportunity to demonstrate value across a patient's full spectrum of care. And the full spectrum of care is not necessarily limited to a hospital, but it starts in their delivery to a hospital, then their time in a hospital, and then their time outside of a hospital afterwards. Mm-hmm. So as you look at value-based care, I think there are significant opportunities all across the healthcare system. There are some opportunities that are better than others. Ultimately, a lot of that really depends upon data. And I think that's where technology really plays a huge role in value-based care is data. If you can have data to show that you're doing something better, that's very powerful. But if you can also use data to show where maybe you have a weakness and where you have to look for process improvement, that's even more important because that's really truly where you're going to demonstrate a lot of value.
Right. And you nailed it on the head because I even remember when during our time together at Envision, you're one of the executives who really, relies heavily on data when making your decisions, something that's actionable that really tells you this is the area where we need to invest more versus the other. And I think that's profound in building a very, that culture of innovation, so to say, where you actually use data to make certain decisions versus, latest trends or versus, your emotions, so to say. So that's very exciting. I'm very excited about that. When it comes to innovation in general, we briefly talked about that. What strategies or methodologies do you utilize or deploy that consistently help you and your teams to come up with innovative ways to solve problems for your patients, for your customers, for your products that you offer? Just curious to get your take on that, because in the current times, when we talk about COVID and, everything kind of, if we compare it to that Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's, we're almost at the lowest level where, safety and the basic needs take priority versus the innovation, yet there's still a greater need for that. I'm curious to get your take on that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And a group of our leaders went through a process last year with a consulting firm in Nashville called the Disruption Lab. And it was all focused on innovation. And it was really interesting because we went around, We had some classroom work. We had on-site work where we went to different innovation teams. We went to Mayo Clinic. We went to Anthem. We went to Emory University. So we went to a lot of different, we even went to Daimler-Benz. So it was cross-industry, but the one common, most important principle, if I took nothing else out of that experience, is start with the problem, then find the solution. And I think if you look at, first of all, innovation is not all about technology, but a lot of times technology is the solution.
Right.
But I think so many people try to do the opposite. They find a technology they like and then try to apply it to their business. Well, they may not actually have a problem that it's solving. So it all starts with, start with your problem and then go find the solution to that problem, whether it's technology or something else. It may just be a process improvement that you need in your business. And maybe that's not a technology solution. So start with the problem, then find the solution. That's the mantra.
That's, you know, it seems so basic yet often overlooked, where you just start jumping straight to solutioning without even understanding what's the, you know, at the core of our problem that we're trying to solve. And a lot of times that leads to a lot of, you know, ineffective decision making, even selections where you don't quite understand, you know, the root cause or the particular problem you're trying to solve. So I love that advice.
Thank you.
When initially you briefly talked about some strategies that you also apply in your hiring when you look for people to join your teams. I want to talk a little bit about that for the candidates that interview with you. Can you tell us, give us a glimpse into what does the interview with Dr. Kaplan look like? Do you tend to get creative with your interviews? Do you keep them pretty traditional? But most importantly, what do you look for in the responses from the people that you interview?
Yeah, so I don't do as much interviewing as I used to. And I will tell you, it's one of the things that I miss the most. Because I really enjoy interviewing people. I think it's a great opportunity to get to know people. I actually had fun interviewing people. I know a lot of people find it to be kind of an onerous task. And part of it was, I had this premise that when you're hiring people, there is a certain failure rate that is always going to occur. If I could uncover things about somebody and really get to know them, I could tilt those odds just a little bit in my favor. And I think you could demonstrate longer term success. And when I look at the people I interviewed with over the years, most of those people are still with the organization. A lot of it was, I tried to find what are their flaws and what do they need in order to reach their maximum potential. So a lot of my interview process was asking, you know, some, you know, very basic get to know you questions, but then I tried to really kind of soften somebody up in the middle. And that's where the fun creative part came in. And I would always ask them, you know, what's your favorite movie? I love the movie Shawshank Redemption. I'm not sure why it's everybody's favorite movie, but it by far is the leader in the clubhouse when it comes to that question. I would ask them the last book they read, and that was kind of a double-edged question, because I kind of wanted to see what their, sometimes people would answer with a, well, you mean workbook or pleasure book? And it's an open question, and I kind of wanted to see where they went with it. I think sometimes if people are too focused on work, they lose sight of bigger goals, and they don't have the proper resources to really be good at their job if they don't have an outside life. And I think probably the most important question I would ask people is, what's their biggest weakness? I think it was very important as a leader to know somebody's weakness so that you can help put them in position to succeed, which I think is one of our most important roles as a leader. But I think from the other side, if you don't know your weakness, I truly think you probably don't know yourself. And I think you have some maturation and growth to do, because we all have a weakness. There's nobody who's walking around who's perfect. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know your weakness, you can't actually work around that and actually figure out how to improve upon that. So those are kind of the ways I went through the interview process. Really had a good success rate in interviewing and hiring over the years, and I'm quite proud of that. And I think a lot of it comes from, I went to a couple of interview workshops, and that's where I kind of came up with some of those strategies that I had. It wasn't just, you know, go in and ask a bunch of questions. I actually went to some workshops where I really kind of put together a strategy of how you interview someone.
Wow, I love these recommendations. It was actually one of the reasons that I joined the current organization I'm with, ProSource IT, is because, you know, being the IT staffing organization, I lead the division where I partner with executives, and, you know, we really work together when it comes to formulating a strategy, bringing very niche, high, you know, very advanced skill set to the organization, and really understanding what does that process look like. And some of the recommendations that you're providing here is, you know, they're very practical. They're very easy to implement, yet oftentimes, you know, they're overlooked. And to be able to get to know somebody on the personal level and also asking questions like about their weakness, I think that really demonstrates their ability to, you know, self-awareness, really to understand kind of who am I as a person? And really not being afraid to relay that in the interview format, because a lot of times we hear a lot of these scripted responses when we interview people, but having that interpersonal, you know, relationship, especially during this short conversation in the interview format, I think that's very important. So I'm very excited that, you know, executives like yourself really take that approach and also allow the candidates to interview you from the standpoint of who am I joining? Who's my leader at the end of the day? So that's, you know, that's very exciting.
Absolutely. Thank you.
What are the most in-demand skill sets and at the same time the hardest to find in your space, in your industry, or, you know, or for the projects that you're trying to staff for? And furthermore, what strategies do you deploy to attract that type of talent to your teams?
So I think the hardest thing to find in our industry right now is physicians that truly understand leadership and relationships. And I think our healthcare programs throughout the country do a great job of educating physicians on delivering excellent healthcare. And I think we do have the best healthcare system in the world. Where I think sometimes we fall short is developing the other side of a physician, the non-scientist part, in that leadership and relationships component. And especially when you're in an organization like ours where you need physicians to lead other physicians, because we're a physician-led organization, those skill sets are not something that most physicians have when they come out of training. So how do you find people that have some of those innate skill sets? And if not, how do you help develop some of those skill sets? In terms of really trying to attract them and find them, a lot of it comes down to references. And I go back to some of what I said about technology references is, I don't want the references that you're giving me because I know they're already cherry-picked to be good. A lot of times when I am working with people and interviewing people, I'll say, tell me the last three places you worked. And obviously I make sure that, you know, they've already cleared it, that people know that they are, you know, looking for other opportunities or that they're, you know, graduating residency and going into practice. But I'll pick up the phone and I'll just start calling random people at those organizations. And I'll start with the secretary who answers the phone. I'll start with, if it's a medical student, and they'll be like, oh, let me put my attending on the phone. No, wait, I actually want to hear your opinion. What was this doctor like to work with? Did he help teach you as a student? Because those skills carry forth when they go into practice. So again, it's you have to have the time and diligence to really get to know somebody more than just kind of that little time frame that you have in an interview. So
that's, you know, you nailed it on the head, and it resonates because I've spent some time last year I interviewed the chief medical officer of ChenMed. And when him and I were talking about something similar, what you and I are discussing, when it comes to onboarding the physicians or even finding the physicians who, you know, at the end of the day are leaders, and they actually send them through this almost, I want to say, like 9 to 12 month training program, which is hands-on and really focuses a lot on these qualifications and really qualities as a leader. Because, well, you know, you may have great expertise in your domain, whatever you practice, but when it comes to the actual, you know, soft skills and leadership skills, that takes time. That takes time to develop. So that definitely resonates with what you're talking about.
Yeah, so some people are born with that, but more often than not, medicine does not self-select those types of people, because medicine selects the people who are, you know, top of their class in college and are really able to focus on the academics. And a lot of times that's at the expense of socialization and social development. So, it's something that I've kind of tried to explain to a lot of our operations people when they're dealing with physicians who can be a little more challenging at times, said, like, try and understand that what this person's course has been to get to where they are and how different it's been than your course in life and where, how you got to where you are. And when you step back and put yourself in their shoes and then look at the other side and empathize, people really start to say, oh, okay, now I understand it. I get it. And then you can really actually help develop those soft skills in other people rather than just kind of saying, this guy's got it, this one doesn't, and, you know, let's just move on.
Right. Absolutely. Definitely, you know, healthcare needs a lot more leaders like yourself.
Thank you.
Dr. Kaplan, last but not least, I'm going to actually pull one of your own recommendations on you. And I'm going to ask you, what is one book? Well, let's first start with, what are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others? And why is that?
So the one book I'm reading right now, I actually forgot the name, but it's a David Baldacci book. It's the first in his line. It's about it's a murder mystery. Very enjoyable, kind of get your mind out of work. He's a great author. But the book that I recommend to others is a book called Messages by Matthew McKay. And I read it early in my career, and I've actually read it twice since then. And it really gets down to communication. And so much of what we do is about communication and different forms of communication and how people have different biases in what they hear and what they communicate and how we then apply those biases and backgrounds differently to our message. And I think when you really step back and listen to that and really try and process, it helps you formulate what you're trying to say. It helps you formulate different approaches of dealing with different groups of people. And I think if there's one real clear, loud message that I took from that book, it was the need to listen first. And there's very few people who are great listeners. And there's a difference between passive listening and active listening. I've met a couple great business executives over the years who were incredible listeners. And I had a mentor once say to me, you're born with two ears and one mouth, and they should be used in that proportion.
Absolutely. I love that. For our listeners, we'll make the titles of these books available in episode notes. I'm definitely going to add it to my to read list. And I love what you're talking about listening, because, you know, one of my favorite quotes is by Dalai, you know, Lama, where it goes within the lines of, when you talk, you're merely repeating what you already know. But if you listen, you may actually learn something new. So that kind of goes hand in hand with what you're talking about.
Very true.
You know, listening, having two ears and one mouth, and using that in that proportion. So that's, you know, that's great. Dr. Kaplan, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're very busy, and you found time to share some knowledge with us today. It was very insightful. I learned quite a bit. Definitely going to stay in touch with you and looking forward to doing maybe another episode in a couple of years to see how much have changed, how much have transpired. Definitely looking forward to that.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here. Really neat to see your career develop the way it has, and really glad to keep the relationship ongoing. And if there's anything I can do, you know, you always know where to reach me.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.